The following program contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. Yes, coming to your cordless, everybody. Hi, I'm Jim Peters. It's 11:02 p.m. on the East Coast of the United States, 8:02 p.m. on the West Coast, 2 minutes after 2 p.m. in the afternoon in Sydney, Australia, and 2 minutes after 10 p.m. at night here in Elon Omar's district in Northeast Minneapolis. Why is that funny? It is. What the hell is she doing in Congress? And I'm Jim Peters, and welcome to another edition of Jim Peters at Night. This is installment number 52, for those of you who are counting at home. Glad to have you. So here's my problem. It's 10 p.m. here. I do this live. Yeah, I'm actually talking to you live right now. Well, unless you're watching this on demand, of course. You know, then it's like, who knows what you're doing or where you are. But yeah, we do this live. And around 9 p.m., about an hour before this, I decided I was really hungry and had to eat. Now, the problem with that is that at 68 years old, here's my problem now. If I eat anything of any substance whatsoever, I immediately want to take a nap. It's terrible. This old age shit sucks. And I'm just at the very beginning of it. It's like, oh my God. So, yeah, I'm kind of fighting sleep. I'll tell you. I had a chicken fajita bowl. It was excellent. That was not a problem. It's like, now I want to take a nap. Yeah. Okay, so what's going on here? I'll tell you what's going on here. First of all, on Tuesday night, we had Michael Harrison on from the Talkers Magazine for our 50th show. Fantastic interview. I suggest you go back and watch it. This guy has done everything. I call him the grand poobah of talk media in the United States, and he is. So that's the reason. No less than Sean Hannity has said he's the single most important person in talk radio in America, and he is. Because he's a founder and publisher of Talkers Magazine, the industry trade publication for talk media, and he invented the AOR radio format, and he's done like everything. Here's what I'm getting around to. He's even the lead singer of the legendary '60s band Gun Hill Road. Now they started back up. They are now making music again, and one of their songs is called Idiots, and he said on the interview, I didn't know this, but it makes sense, that they get played more on talk radio stations than they do on music radio stations, because most of their lyrics now have to do with issues. They have issue-oriented lyrics. You know, and he said they actually do some love songs, that sort of stuff too, but he said they get all the attention for the issues-oriented lyrics. They have a song called Idiots, which, as you might imagine, it was perfect for this program. And so I told him after the interview that at the end of the show on Tuesday night, we would play the music video for that. And actually, music aside, and the music's good, it's a very, very cool music video. And apparently it was all generated via AI. And you have to see it. So that's the point. Of course, I was going to play it. And you know me, I forgot. I forgot to push the stupid little button and play the thing. And I even forgot to announce it because I just forgot. So Wednesday night, last night, Jeff Meyer comes on. We had a great discussion with him, too. He likes to people say he's a Debbie Downer, but the thing is, he's got important things to say. And also, I have to mention that he mentioned a sermon by a pastor named Greg Hamrick that I told him I would post on our blog, and I went looking for it, and the problem is the guy's got two similar sermons that are almost but not quite the same. And I didn't know what video Jeffrey wanted me to play, so I wrote him. He hasn't got back to me yet. As soon as he gets back to me, I will post that. So my point is, I posted also to our blog the video for Michael Harrison's for the Gun Hill Road track Idiots. That's on there too. And we did play it last night. We played it at the end of the show last night. Did you guys all follow that? No. Because he's babbling. Why does he babble? Mommy, tell me, what is he? Why does he babble so much? Because I'm a talker. That's what I do. And also, that's why I'm doing this job. So this is what we got. It's the end of our week this week. I'm here alone tonight. Next Wednesday is the 60th anniversary of the assassination of JFK, and we're doing a special show, and it was going to be a panel discussion, but it looks like my panel's falling apart. I've decided that's not necessarily a bad thing, because I want to explain to you my theory after 20 years of studying, no, what am I talking about? About 30, 35 years of studying this stuff, what I think happened in Dealey Plaza on Friday, November 22nd, 1963. Let me put it this way. Lee Harvey Oswald is involved, but he probably didn't even pull a trigger. That's probably what's going on here. So I'm going to explain that to you. It's going to take a while. I did this on my radio show about 2 years ago. I did the same type of show, and my description or my explanation of what I think happened, and of course, I want to point out entirely my speculation, you know, and I'm getting, which of this show is all basically mostly my speculation. I'm going to get to that in a second, too. We're going to talk about that tonight. It took about 45 minutes. So I think, yeah, okay, that's fine. So I don't know if we're going to have a guest on Wednesday. We're going to do shows Monday and Tuesday. And here's another thing I'm thinking out loud, there's a possibility at the last minute we might cancel Monday's show. I got some stuff going on. I'm just starting to realize that it might bleed into the time here to 10 p.m. And so, we'll see. That's all I got going on there. So we're talking about like the fact that the show is entirely my speculation. So here's what I got tonight. I went to lunch with a friend of mine today, and he says to me, and he watches the show, and he says, now, you know, I told this to Michael Harrison, just to be perfectly blunt here, I know not a lot of people watch this live. I know that, at least not yet. We got pretty good viewership on demand. We really do. Matter of fact, we haven't cracked it, but we're almost at 900 followers on Rumble. And considering the fact we've only been doing this for about, we've only done 52 shows, that's pretty damn good. Relatively speaking, our on-demand viewership is strong. Live, not so much yet. But I have a friend of mine who watches the show, and I'm at lunch with him, and he said, you know, he told me he was really pissed off when I said, when I was doing some monologue about the Palestinians and the Israelis, when I said, it's plainly obvious the Palestinians don't want their own state. And he said that to me, and I said, did I really say that? He said, yes, you did. And now that I think about it, I even told him right there, I thought about it for about 20 seconds, and I realized he's right. I did say that. What I meant was, it's obvious Hamas doesn't want its own state. Now, I've always done this. I've done this on my radio show. Not only do I do corrections, I do them at the top of the show. I'm not like the New York Times. I don't bury them on the back page. I'm doing it right here. So I would like to apologize. That remark is probably wrong. Now, that said, I'm holding to my correction that's probably incorrect. But I do want, after I stopped to think about this after my lunch this evening, I realized there's the mitigating factors here. First of all, Hamas is the elected government of the Palestinians in Gaza. You have to understand that. Now, they were elected in 2006, and they have not allowed a free election since then. So you could make this very distinct argument, as I will, that they have evolved into a dictatorship. They have not had a free election in, 17 years. It appears, as best anybody can tell, the election to that elected Hamas to their government in 2006 was legitimate. In other words, there was no one or not enough people in the government before then in Gaza to cheat that election. So it's always been assumed that election itself was legitimate. But like I said, there hasn't been one since. So Hamas has basically taken over the place. Now, also, Hamas is, now they're overt about it, but for many, many years, internally, it turns out, after we found this out after the fact, that it's basically death to Israel. They haven't sworn to eliminate the country of Israel. They've sworn to kill every Jew on earth. That's actually their goal. So, all right, you take all that in consideration. So Hamas is the elected government of Gaza, and Hamas wants to kill every Jew on earth. Well, you know, I could make an argument then that by extension, the people of Palestine, or the Palestinians, I'm not going to call Gaza Palestine, but there are Palestinians living there, that because of their elected government, by extension, you could say they agreed to this. So, but I just want to point out, we don't know. Matter of fact, a lot of the mainstream media has sent reporters over there, and I watched this thing on CBS News where he actually asked some of the people who are living in Gaza whether they supported the Hamas government, about half and half, which would be about my guess, too. If you actually ask them to re-elect the Hamas government, I think that election would be pretty close. There are, we're looking at this and you're thinking, how could you elect a bunch of terrorists? But there's people, in a substantial number of people, apparently, in Gaza who live there, did live there. I don't know where they've gone now, who actually support Hamas. There's a lot of Palestinians who want to see Jews dead, but I don't know the number. And that's the thing. I don't know if anybody does. There's certainly never been a poll taken, you know, so, and these reporters are going there pushing microphones in people's faces, and you don't know what they're going to say. But according to what the thing I saw on CBS, it was about half and half. Half of them said they supported Hamas and half of them didn't. The other thing is, this is a known fact too, but I got to get this to, this is where this gets really tricky. This is about the fact that the Hamas government has kept the people of Gaza from leaving. For a while, Egypt opened the border on the south to let them actually come in, and the Hamas government stopped their citizens from actually leaving. And so you can make an argument that they're using their citizens basically as collateral damage, hostages, whatever, you know. I mean, this is not a pretty picture. These Hamas people, this is not pretty. And so, and I'm going to get to this second, but here's the real thing that made me think about this. And my friend made me think about this too. Also, I have another friend who brought something up too. It was a small point. He watches this show also. And he said, I was talking about Biden and the document saga, which now there's reports coming out of Washington that they're not going to prosecute or take any action against Biden for all these classified documents he had in his garage, even though Trump is going to stand trial for the exact same thing, the precise exact same thing, and it looks like they're just going to give Biden a pass. Well, of course they are. You know, apparently, you know, and the question is, why are they standing up for this guy? Everybody in Washington seems to owe him a favor, and it appears that it is probably quid pro quo. He's been in Washington for 40, 47 years, and he's treated a whole bunch of people really nice, and it's reciprocity. They're treating him nice back. I don't know if he actually has anything on anybody in particular, like anybody in the DOJ or the FBI or anything like that. I'm just thinking they're all pretty much Democrats, and they're basically, and he's treating them well, so they're doing him a favor. I think that's what's going on. I mean, once again, I'm just speculating, and this is what I'm getting to with this here, too. So my friend, I said on this program, let me first tell you what I said. I said that that any documents that were taken while Joe was a senator, and here's the actual interesting thing about this. The reason this came up is because my friend works for a company in Washington, D.C., who builds spiff rooms. Now, those are the special protect, I can't remember what that stands for, but they're basically their safe rooms where people can go and look at documents and look at data. And there's no radio frequency that gets in and out of here, or photography, or that you can't run your cell phone. There's special rooms designed to basically let people look at documents in a highly secure environment. And the interesting thing is, my friend said, I didn't know this. He said, you'd be surprised how many of these, there's probably 10,000 of these rooms in the country worldwide, and most of them are not owned by the government. You know, it's like, so corporations have these things, but in Congress, they have them too. So this is so members of Congress can go and look at classified documents and they can make sure you can't copy them. You can't take notes. You can't anything. You just look at it, right? All right. So somehow, supposedly, and the mainstream media has reported this, that some of those documents ended up in Biden's hands. Now, when he's vice president, you can make a really good argument, a legitimate argument, that all that stuff crosses over his desk and some of it, he gets confused or some of it ends up getting mixed with other papers, all sorts of stuff. You can make a very, very good argument that a vice president even, the president can do, supposedly, well, Trump, they're going to stop, but supposedly the president can't actually take these documents. But you can make an argument that the vice president at least has access to them outside of the spiff rooms, and he does. But but a senator, the only way you could have the document is to steal it, or somebody on your staff to steal it. Literally take it out of the spiff room. That's it. So I pointed this out, and my friend said, how do you know that these documents are actually from that era? And well, here's the deal. The reason I know is because a whole bunch of media outlets have reported it. But do I personally know? No, I don't. And that gets to the point of my entire, this is the reason I'm doing this entire little talk here. I only know what the media reports. This is not a news program. So it's a commentary program, and I comment on stuff that I read. Now, I don't know what news is legitimate and what isn't. I don't. I use my best judgment, and also I use my experience from going through this stuff. But I actually don't know. You know, my friend said, did you read it in the New York Times? And that's hilarious, because I do not consider the New York Times a valid news source anymore. I don't. And I know a whole bunch of people agree with me on that. And I'm going to get to something that here in just a minute, too, that it's not the New York Times, it's the BBC. That's something they reported wildly wrong. And like I said, the New York Times will offer corrections when they do report stuff incorrectly, but you can't find the correction. It's buried in the newspaper. It's like you'll never know. The thing they got wrong could be on the front page, top, big headline, and they will bury the correction just, you know, on page 62B or something like that, and you will never see it, ever. It's like, so I don't know if that counts as correcting, like I said. And I've done this on my radio programs, too. I correct stuff at the top of the show so we can go on. And I had this very interesting thing that happened on one of my radio shows a couple of years ago. So we're having a panel discussion, and I just happened to mention, we're talking about a local Minnesota issue, even though all the radio shows I did were national. But still, you know, I'm out of Minneapolis, and we do, even here, we do a good deal of talking about Minnesota issues. Just because it's a fair, I don't know. I don't know if it's in an interesting place. I think it is. It is. Minneapolis is easily one of the most liberal cities in the country. There's no doubt about that. Like I said, Ilhan Omar is the representative of the district I'm sitting in this very second. She's fucking crazy. She's absolutely crazy. And I want to point this out. This is an apocryphal story, but supposedly it's true. I actually don't. I don't. Once again, I have no proof of this. I don't. But this has been floating around the media here privately in the Twin Cities since this happens, since she took office in Congress. Supposedly, between the election in November, where she got elected to Congress, and when was this? Is this like four years ago, something like that? 5 years ago? Between the time she was elected and January 3rd, when she was sworn in, supposedly a whole bunch of clergymen here in Minneapolis got together with her. It was basically an intervention. And she said, you know, all this Jew-hating shit you've said over the years? They said, you can't say this anymore. You're going to be representing the United States in Congress, and you can't get away with this shit. They said, we strongly urge you to cut it out. And supposedly she said at that meeting that she would, and well, look what happened. She didn't. So now, you know, so, and then there's on top of that, and this is reported by the Star Tribune, although they did not actually confirm it either. If I'm right, I think they said there was a very strong probability she married her brother, but no one's ever been able to actually come up with any proof of it. I don't know how the Star Tribune speculated that either, but they did. So it's like, yeah, I'm dealing with crazy people here. You know, my representative. That's great. That's terrific. But yeah, Minneapolis. So anyway, I'm getting back to my point. I'm doing this radio show, and we're talking about a Minnesota issue, and I happened to bring up the fact that I said it was a transportation issue, and I said, well, you know, supposedly the commissioner of the department of the Minnesota department, the commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Transportation does not report to the governor, who reports to, he or she reports to the legislature, and because of that, they never get fired ever, because the legislature actually would have to vote on it. Whereas most everyone else in the Minnesota government on an executive level reports to the chief executive, the governor. So I said this, and I said, yeah, well, a friend of mine put me on this a couple of years ago. We got a call that said I was wrong. They said, check this out. You know, your guy on the radio is wrong. All right. So the next day I got on and I issued an apology. Apparently that is not true, that the commissioner does report to the governor, and I was wrong. The day after that, we get another call from somebody else. Said, no, you were right in the first place. And it turns out I was. I don't know who called this. I think it was supposedly somebody from the state government, the first call, supposedly. But it turned out that they were wrong, that the commissioner of transportation actually does not report to the governor. The commissioner is appointed by the governor, but does not report to the governor. So yeah, maybe that was a confusion. I don't know. But so I had to issue a correction, my correction. It's like, shit, I was right in the first place, you know? God. Anyway, the reason I'm bringing all that up is here, there's a disclaimer at the top of the show. The 90% of the stuff I talk about here is conjecture, speculation, and my own opinion. I want to point that out. Now, I do this show off the top of my head. I have a little outline I follow here. I spend hours putting it together, but there's not a lot of points. It's less than one page long. I got talking points to do what I'm going to go through, but I do the show off the top of my head. One of the callers that called in about a month ago, so we're 14 weeks into this. We're 3.5 months into this. About a month ago, 6 weeks ago, we had a caller, and the guy said, you know what I like about your show? He says, it sounds like guys who get together at the coffee shop and just talk about stuff. And I can't tell you how pleased I was with that, because that's exactly the idea here. I don't script this stuff out for a reason. I don't want to sound like I'm reading stuff. I want to sound like I'm talking to you. I also get a lot of comments about my swearing, and believe it or not, they're all positive. All the comments I've gotten about my swearing have been positive. We have a disclaimer at that at the top of the show, too. Yeah, I swear like a sailor. I do. I'm kind of trying to tone it down a little bit, but the F word comes in really handy sometimes. And this is another thing, too. In my previous employer, he had a very interesting thing. And I've said this before, but I think it bears repeating. He said, well, I don't mind it. Well, we were on the internet, a podcast, you know. He said, I don't mind if you swear. I don't mind if you use the F word, but don't use it to actually describe the sex act. You can use it in an expletive. And at first I thought, well, that's stupid. That's where it comes from, you know. But after I stopped to think about it, I thought, you know, that's not a bad thing. You know, I do not use the F word to talk about the sex act. I won't. I will use the word like stupping, you know, all the Austin Power funny words and stuff like that. But I won't use the F word to talk about that. I'll use the F word to describe shit that politicians do. That I will, you know. And I don't know why this kind of resonates. And now I had a complete about face on that. I decided after thinking about it, I thought, you know, he's got it right. That's actually pretty cool, you know. So, yeah, so I don't, you know, but at any rate, yeah, I swear. And the idea is it's supposed to sound like you and your friends at the coffee shop. That's what it is. I'm talking off the top of my head, and God heaven, this is not a news program, okay? What are we doing here? I'm trying to make you think. I don't really care if you agree with me or not. I'm trying to get you to think. And I have to point, there's a caveat with one exception, and that's climate change. I'll tell you right now, I want to convince you that climate change is bullshit. If I accomplish anything, one thing here, if I do this for 15 years, if I accomplish any one thing, it's that. Climate change is so much bullshit. No other issue ever put before the American public has been so god-awful, completely, utterly wrong. And so, you know, the New York, you know, so we had Patrick Moore who, former founder of Greenpeace, quit Greenpeace because of climate change. And he's a climatologist. He's a scientist. He wrote a book explaining why climate change is bullshit. There's a link to it in our blog. It's called, it's something about something, fake catastrophes and threats of doom or something like that. So, I agree with him totally. I know he's right. I know this. I've also talked to privately to climatologists, famous people who've told me it's bullshit, and he said they won't say it in public because they'll lose their funding. And that's the thing. This is the most politicized scientific issue of our time. Absolutely no doubt about it. It makes the UFO stuff look like bullshit. Because, the reason I brought up the Moore's interview, and you should go back and watch it. It's the single most watched show in our series this far. Single one. About 2 days after that, first of all, this was really hilarious. About 4 hours after we taped that show. Now, we broadcast live on YouTube. Those shows are automatically turned into on-demand archives, right? So as soon, like 5 minutes after we're done, YouTube creates the video where people can go watch it permanently. About 4 hours after we were done, YouTube posts a thing on our channel on YouTube saying that we're distributing misinformation. Now, they didn't pull the video, but they did put contextual comments on it. Yeah, and they explained how, what we were saying is not necessarily true, and they linked to a page on the United Nations website. Now, we have a link to that page in our blog. About a day later, about 24 hours later, for whatever reason, YouTube pulled the misinformation banner. They pulled it. It's no longer there. But we have a record to the page on the United Nations website where they link to this. It's the existential threat of our time, which the president just said yesterday or something like that. Bullshit. I call bullshit. It's just complete and utter bullshit. So watch the interview with Patrick Moore, or actually better, read his book. It's a little scientifically dense. He doesn't think so because he's a brainiac. And the thing is, I know a good deal about science, even though I'm not a scientist. So, I mean, I read the whole thing and I did understand it, but it's pushing. There are no mathematical formulas in it, but there's a lot of charts and graphs. And it's pushing the average person's understanding of comprehension of science. It does. But still, it's well worth a read. He does a better job explaining how this is bullshit than any other person I've seen. Now, the other person, and he knows, and I want to get this guy on, is Michael Schellenberger. Schellenberger did the same thing. He was a prominent climatologist who flipped, and he also has a book out on why climate change is bullshit. And those two books are probably the preeminent books in the field regarding that. And then the hilarious thing is, about a week later, this is unbelievable. And this is the thing I've said about the false flag operation on the UFOs. I think at some point, and everybody in the UFO field says the people in the military are telling them it's going to be 2028. I don't know why that year has come up, but it comes up over and over again. At some point, I think the government's going to point to the sky and say the aliens are going to come in attack us, and we need $1 bazillion to fight them off. That's going to be a way to raise taxes. That's what I think. It's going to be a complete false flag, because here's the proof, folks. I have proof of this. If the aliens wanted to kill us, they would have done so already. Okay? All right? Because they don't, we don't need to know that they're coming to know that they could do it. Right? So if you can fly across interstellar space in a reasonable amount of time, you got way more technology than we do, my friend. So, yeah, anyway, so I'm getting back to this. I'm sorry, I'm going all over the place. So the United Nations, about a week after the misinformation thing on YouTube, they put up a new page on information on climate change, and they said, I'm not joking about this, they literally said, we can solve the climate change problem with $75 trillion. Now, you heard me right, $75 trillion. The whole accumulated debt of the United States is $36 trillion, and our annual output. I mean, the output of everything in the United States that generates money, everything. The entire GDP in the United States is about $16 trillion. You know, and they want $75 trillion. We only want $75 trillion. And what are they going to do with it? I mean, this is like the most ineffectual organization on earth. I totally agree with Trump when he stopped paying them. I don't think I'm not saying we should quit this per se, but I don't think we should give them any money. You know, if they want to kick us out for not paying, fine. But there's a bunch of European countries that didn't pay for years and years and years until Trump came. Hey, look, you pay up. He said, if you don't pay, we're not going to pay. And they started paying. They did. And people said, oh, you know, Trump is, you know, he's just this coarse, evil guy who just bosses people around. They started paying. You know, you probably saw this on, I don't know, this was on Stephen Colbert. Barbara Streisand comes on, you know, friendly liberal audience. And Colbert asked him, what happens if Trump gets reelected? She said, I'm moving out of the country. Now, somebody pointed out, Jimmy Fallon, the comedian on Fox News and the guy on Fox Radio, he pointed out, he said, and he's right, nobody has ever held to that promise. Nobody. No one's ever, all those people that said that they were going to leave the country if Trump won, none of them ever left, ever. But this is the part that I don't understand. I understand why, before Trump took office, why everyone was up in arms. I did. Now, I voted for Trump the first time, and here's my logic. And that is, I knew Hillary Clinton was going to be a disaster. I was positive of that. So I'm like, well, okay, you know, Trump, he may be a disaster, he may not. So it was like, I got a sure disastrous thing and a partial disaster thing. I honestly had no idea how he'd do. I could see it going well, and I could easily see it being a real disaster too. I could. But I was positive she was going to fuck the whole thing up. Totally. So I voted for him, you know. So I understand there's that, you know, even though I voted for the guy, there was that time before he took office, and especially, you know, up to the tax cut thing in December in the first year, where no one really knew what was going to happen, you know? And so if you thought we're scared then, I understand. I really do. But here's the problem. He's been president once already, and it went great. This is the part I don't understand. Yeah, he says terrible things. He's a vindictive asshole. Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. He is. But what he did, the country ran really, really well, which is the reason he's got so many people are steadfastly standing, you know, supporting him right now. You know, so it's like people, you know, I've heard so many people, they're already starting on MSNBC. If Trump wins, it's going to be the end of democracy. Well, it wasn't the last time, you know, and meanwhile, we got a guy in office who can barely, you know, not soil himself. And it's not the end of democracy, but things aren't going well. I don't know if you've noticed, you know, shit. So now I will check the outline to see where I'm at in explaining stuff to you, you know? Okay, like, seriously, I'm serious. You know, you don't have to buy everything I say. Like I said, other than climate change, I only want to make you think. I really do want to try to convince you that climate change is bullshit. I have two missions, and I didn't have them when I started the show 52 shows ago. That was July 31st. I have two missions here, and that's to give voice to a whole bunch of interesting people. I don't even necessarily have to disagree with them. I mean, we had Jeff Meyer on last night. I have no problem saying this. Jeff knows this. He's way more conservative than I am. He is. You know, I don't care. I want to give him a voice, you know. And I've had a friend of mine says, why don't you have more liberal people on? And I would if they come on. And the thing is, like, for example, one of my goals to get on the show is Bill Maher. I'd love to have Bill Maher on. Now, I don't agree with a lot of stuff with Bill Maher, but the thing is, he's like the epitome to me of the open, cogent liberal. I mean, we disagree, but still, he can think, and we can have a really interesting discussion. Ilhan Omar, never coming on the show. Why? She's nuts. That's the thing. And I've gone on and on about this. The problem, the way I, you know, David Straub said this to me famously about a year ago. He said, you know, doing what we do right now is really easy because the Democratic Party is truly crazy. And he's right. But actually, there's a caveat to that. Not the entire Democratic Party, only about 20% of them, but somehow they've taken over the entire party. That's the thing, and I don't get why the rest of the party let them do that. The 20% of the leftists, who are these complete, utter crazy people on the squad, have essentially taken over the party. And I don't, you know, I don't, you know, I no, I have no problem with most liberals, none with most liberals anyway. But the crazy people, I will not talk to. That I won't. Well, first of all, you can't have a conversation with these people. I mean, they're, you know, have you ever listened to the stuff? You listen to an interview with AOC? You ever heard her talk? I mean, that woman is she's bonkers. There's no other way around it. And here's the amazing thing. She was an economics major. What? Huh? You don't know anything about money. Like, you know, you kicked Amazon out of your district. I mean, 25,000 jobs that were paying people more than $100,000 a year. That's no bullshit. That's not an exaggeration. They were going to, you know, she represents Long Island City in Manhattan. And they were going to build their East Coast office there. And they were going to have in this office, there was more than people, but they were going to have, there were 25,000 people that they were going to work there that would have jobs paying more than 100K. And that was, so in other words, it was actually more people than that. Just 25,000 people making $100,000 a year or more in her district. She said, no, we don't want that. And she's giving them shit. And finally, Bezos said, fuck you, and he left. Well, they didn't do it. That's responsible legislation? No. You know, and she said, oh, they're going to pollute the environment or whatever. Yeah, do you know how many taxes? Oh, she had a problem with the tax breaks they were going to give Amazon at the start. The problem with that is, in the backside, they would have made back so much of that money so quickly, it was unbelievable. That's the thing. It was just a short-term thing. It was a short-term incentive to let them build. They actually wanted to build a building, you know, and get that out of the way. And once they started running and rolling, and the taxes for the city would have been enormous. I mean, this woman's stupid. And these are, I look at this is basic things. This is not, you know, and this is gets back to what my friend was talking about, the difference between the Palestinians and Hamas. And that is, I do understand the other point of view regarding Israel. And that is, you know, that 75 years ago, you could say, well, Israel kicked the Palestinians out. You know, that's a very distinct, strong argument. My thing is that there's a statute of limitations for everything, and it's too late. It's like the same thing with the Native American Indians. You know, we treated these people like crap, and we took their land. But it was 250 years ago. There, you know, there is stuff we can still do. I don't know if reparations are in order, but like, for example, and this has been pointed out many times, on some reservations, Native Americans cannot own the land they're on. In other words, it belongs to the quote unquote reservation owns it. Now, so I don't quite understand the vagaries of this. Some reservations have solved this problem, but some haven't. And it's been, you know, the greatest way to wealth in America is to give people the land that they're living on, or at least let them buy it, you know. So, I mean, there's things that could be done, you know. And then again, God bless them, because we have two... The state of Minnesota is filled with Indian casinos, and we have two huge ones, right? Mystic Lake, right in Prior Lake, right outside of Minneapolis, which is, like I mentioned last night, is where Jeff Meyer lives. It has a huge, huge Las Vegas-style casino. It's enormous. And then down in Red Wing, Minnesota, 50 miles south of here, there's one almost as big. I mean, these are enormous organizations. So I've always thought, well, you know, the Indians finally, they got their comeuppance. They got the white man addicted, you know, to gambling. It's great. Good for them. You know, shit, they deserve it. Christ. But the thing is, no, we're not going to turn around and give the Indians the United States back. We're not going to do it. It's too late. You know, and that's my thing with the Palestinians and the Israelis too. They should have tried it, you know. I mean, what, the first war they actually fought over was in 1967. What is that, 15, 20 years afterwards? You know, so you can't, this has been my complaint about the statute of limitations on rape too. Now, I know a lot of women, You know, really, you know, rape is a real, real thing, and it's traumatic. But you have to tell somebody it happened. And you have to tell the authorities, not just your friends, although that doesn't hurt. You have to report rapists, because otherwise they're going around and they're still raping more women. You know, as painful as you think that is, and you look at all the bad ramifications, or I could lose my job, or no one's going to believe me, blah, blah, blah. No, you still have to do it. You know, so this woman, I can't remember her name, accused Trump of raping her at Bergdorf Goodman in 1993, 30 years ago. 30 years ago. And she just brings it up now. Why? Because Trump's running for president. That's why. That's not her stated reason, but I'm putting words in her mouth. And I will do that, because she had 30 years to report this. You know? It's, well, I could stop him from being reelected now. Well, you know, no, that's not why you should turn him in. If this really happened, you should turn him in, because he's a rapist. It should have nothing to do with politics. I don't know. Just sorry, I kind of got verklempt there. Pissed me off. Okay, so, you know, talking about you know, what I know and what I don't know. Or what we all know and don't know, whether the news we're getting is right or not. 30%, 32, according to this survey, 30% of all people between 18 and 24 get their news from TikTok. That's one third of them get their news from TikTok. And TikTok is, for all practical purposes, owned by the government of China. And the proof of that is that the version of TikTok that they run in China for the Chinese citizens has none of the information on it that the Americans, there's no commingling of the data from those two services. Matter of fact, it even has a different name. I can't remember what it is, but it's not called TikTok. Now, a company called ByteDance, a Chinese company called ByteDance, supposedly owns TikTok. But to run a company, a corporation in China, you have to give the Chinese government a certain amount of ownership in your company, and on top of that, you have to give them a certain amount of control. So if this very famously happened during COVID, and this is, you probably don't remember this, but when the government decided we all needed to wear masks, so the N95 masks are the best masks, right? So one of the major manufacturers of masks, in the United States is 3M, right here in Minneapolis. So the government went to 3M and said, we want to buy, like, you know, hundreds of millions of masks. And 3M said, sure. And then turned around and said, no, sorry, we can't do that. And the reason they did is because their mask manufacturing plant was, and as far as I know, still is, in China. And they started to make these masks. And the Chinese government said, oh, by the way, we're going to take those. And because of the ownership status that 3M had with the Chinese government, which was, and people did not know this, they apparently rescinded this recently, but for many years, if you want to put a Chinese branch of your company, of your corporation in China, you had to give the Chinese government 51% of the ownership of that branch automatically. So that means that the Chinese government is the majority of owner and you're not. And this is one of the problems with capitalism, this sort of unfettered greed. Most corporations said, well, 49% is better than nothing, you know. And of course, I suppose in money terms it is. But you've just turned your corporation over the majority owner interest in it over to communists. It's nuts. I find the fact that corporations did this, and many, many corporations have done it, and those things are, you know, like I said, for new companies, they've rescinded this now. But those, as far as I know, in many or all instances, those former agreements are still in effect. So 3M is manufacturing masks, medical masks in China, and COVID rears its ugly head, and China says, no, we're going to take all those. And 3M didn't have any recourse. So when they announced that they were rescinding on the government's request to make masks for Americans, they got a whole bunch of pushback and backlash, and it's terrible. There's nothing they could do about it, you know. So TikTok is you know, owned in some manner by the Chinese government. And so you're thinking, and then you're looking at this and, you know, 32% of the Gen Z crowd, basically a third of them, are getting their news from TikTok. It's nuts. It's absolutely crazy. You know, I think social media has done way more harm than good. And the other thing that I find amazing about social media is, and all right, I got to think, who brought this up recently? I think I was talking to Strom about this in an interview, about the fact that somebody in an offhand comment, somebody really, really important, was someone in the government said, I think it was someone in the New York Times made some offhand reference to the fact that social media is real. It isn't. It's not real, folks. There's a whole bunch of people on there trolling, and the reason you can troll is because you're anonymous, and I'm not going to sit here because I think this is a really, really thorny First Amendment issue, and I don't know if, I mean, I haven't thought this through. I'm not going to say either way, but I understand there's a distinct argument to letting people do that, and there's a distinct argument to not letting them do that. It seems to me offhand that by the First Amendment, you have to, but on the other hand, corporations who all are owned by, or social media is all owned by private corporate, public corporations in the United States, but not owned by the government. That's my point. They don't have to abide by the First Amendment rules. They don't. They can run the thing any way they want. So you got those conflicting things there. Are we going to need laws that substantially accept social media from the First Amendment? I don't know. I find that very scary. I really do. As a libertarian, I just find that, you know, but anyway, that's the reason social media is so defective, is because there's so many people on there who are not beholden to their own identities. I mean, that's the reason. So you got TikTok, you got all the bunch of people posting anonymously, you know, and all the people on Twitter who are posting under some goofy name, you know, and they're just running around insulting everybody. And it's amazing how many people get upset about this. Now, I'm not going to bring up the details on this because I don't want you to go out looking, but in 2013, for 2 weeks in October, I was the most hated person on the internet. And I have to tell you, it was for something I did. I have no regrets at all, and I didn't lose a drop of sleep over it. I didn't. Because I don't care what people think. I just don't. Well, the amazing thing is, you know, so I'm talking about my friends here at the top of the show. I do care what my friends think. I don't care about what they think about my particular political opinions. I don't care about that. But, you know, if somebody, one of my friends says, you know, like my friend said, you know, what you did here was kind of dishonest, and you should look at this, and I do, you know. But if I don't know you, or you don't have a real name, or you're posted under Polar Bear 537, you know, no, I'm not going to know. I don't give a fuck what you have to say. I don't. Nothing. No. Uh-uh. No, even the guy the guy who posted a telephone number, I'm terrible. I didn't bring this up. So right here, if you want to get on the show tonight, you go to that URL right there. You go to that web page and click the big blue button at the top of the page, and you end up in the queue. Or if you go here, you can call, or you can leave a voicemail, or leave me a text to that number, 408-458-5088. There's a guy who, I don't know who he is. He leaves texts, and all he comments on is my hair. Especially when I don't wash it. Now, it's clean. I don't know if you can tell. That's the thing. I have to be honest. He's pretty good at being able to tell when I don't wash it, even though I think it looks okay. It's clean tonight. Who knows, you know? But yeah, that's all he texts me about. You know, I don't know who this guy is. I mean, it's like, okay, fine. But you can leave me a text. I don't look at any of this stuff while the show's going on, and I certainly don't check the show chats anywhere, even on Rumble. I mean, you know, we're on 8 platforms. I pay the most attention to Rumble. I don't know why. I think, well, first of all, it's the easiest one to watch on your actual TV. If you get if you have Roku or Android or Fire TV, Fire Stick, you know, the Roku apps are the easiest to run. That's what I think. You can watch this live on YouTube too, but it's kind of hard to find. You have to drill through a bunch of menus and stuff. They don't put their live menu on the top of the menu. They don't. You have to, it's under more, I think, or something like that. So, any rate, yeah. So I'm talking about the kids. I'm talking about your kids. It's TikTok. TikTok is bullshit, and so is Facebook and Twitter, for that matter, too. Now we post the show on Facebook and Twitter. It's automatic, but I don't post. I have no social media profile. I do not post anywhere. It's a waste of my time, and it's a waste of your time too. I know people who have like private groups on Facebook, you know, for their families, you know, so they can share family news. Pardon me, excuse me. I was talking about that Mexican food I ate. And, you know, okay, that's cool, you know. That's the thing. It's not completely evil. It isn't. But if you ask me, on balance, it's done more harm than good. So, yeah, so this is unbelievable, but even on The View, the co-hosts there, we're talking about, and you know, I was talking about crazy liberals, Sonny Hostin and Joy Behar. There you go, it's crazy people. They're crazy, but I don't think Whoopi's crazy. Matter of fact, I'd love to interview Whoopi. She's great. She's fantastic. Once again, I probably disagree with her on most things, but she's sane. At least, you know, I could talk to her, but Behar and Hostin or whatever her name is, Sonny, no. But even they're talking about the fact that that TikTok's evil, and I figure, shit, if they're saying that, God Almighty, something's going on, you know. And meanwhile, with that, so getting back to talking about the Hamas and Israeli war, so our friend David Strom posted on Hot Air today that he's posted the fact that there's a columnist at the New York Times, and this woman. No, I did actually, I don't know why I didn't do this. I should have. But if I'm right, her name is Elizabeth Spears, if I'm correct. I didn't actually put it in my notes. I don't know why. But she's got quite a pedigree. She not only writes for the New York Times, she writes for Slate. She's a journalism professor, I think, at Columbia, if I'm right. I'm not sure if that, but she's a journalism. She has a lot of credits to her name. She did not know that Hamas was the elected government of the Palestinians in Gaza. She did not know that. This came out in an opinion piece she wrote, where it's just an offhand comment she meant about something about like the Palestinians not having an elected government or something like that. I was like, what? Even though Strom put it in his piece, I didn't read her exact comment. But yeah, so she's getting enormous shit for this because Strom went on and on about the fact that, you know, I mean, he dumps on the mainstream media more than I do, but he's absolutely right. He just assumes that people of the New York Times have basic knowledge of what they're writing about. Well, apparently they don't. So she was just raked over the coals on Twitter for this. It's like, this woman didn't know, you know. Well, you know, what is she making? Probably $300,000 a year writing for half a dozen different publications or something like that. You know, she's doing okay, you know. People must think she's a good writer, you know. This is like the most basic thing in this entire conflict, and she didn't know it. It's crazy. It's nuts. And finally, I'm going to bring this up. This is kind of interesting. Carissa Thompson, who hosts sports shows for Fox Sports. She used to be a sideline reporter, you know, on football, you know, where it's always a woman. I don't know why. I think they just want to get a hot chick in there, and God knows Miss Thompson kind of qualifies for that, you know. But she said when she used to do sideline reporting for the football games on Fox, that sometimes if she couldn't actually talk didn't get an interview like at halftime with a coach, she would just make something up. now, people are outraged at this too. And you know, I've read stuff online. It was like, oh my God. She admitted this in a podcast. This is from her. She said this herself. And people say, my God, how can you call yourself a journalist and all this sort of stuff? And it isn't me. It's fucking football. It doesn't matter. I don't know. I have a I'm obsessed with what I do. I'm obsessed with talk media. So I mean, every day I check out all the talk shows on like ESPN and Fox Sports. I always watch like, you know, like Undisputed and First Take and you know, and the Herd. And I actually think Colin Cowherd's pretty good. I do, but I couldn't imagine doing that. And I, you know, I'm sitting here. I love to talk. I'm good at it. You know, I can't imagine talking about sports for 3 hours. And have you ever noticed that on these sports shows? I don't know if you noticed, because I'm always like looking for the production aspect of the whole thing. So they got producers and they're running these things, and it's always the way they spark discussion or even controversy is by putting something in the form of a question. Is Aaron Rodgers going to play on Sunday? Actually, that's a real question right now. It is, you know. So that's always how stuff is couched. So the deal is the host and or the panel, they discuss based on the questions. Okay, fine, you know. But seriously, it's just so inanely pointless. I don't know. 20 years ago, it started here in Minneapolis, although my impression is it has not been picked up in other parts of the country. This did not take off as they thought it might. There's a radio station here called My Talk 107. That's basically if they do for lack of a better term, women's talk, and it's mostly entertainment gossip. And so it's because, you know, conservative talk radio appeals mostly to older men. You know, I don't have to tell you that. And the thing is, I was going to ask Michael Harrison about this, and I never actually did, and I should have, about the fact that, you know, people say, well, where's the liberal talk radio? Well, there basically isn't any, because the liberals aren't interested in listening. It's really kind of weird. I mean, and the thing is, you look at the juggernaut that's Fox News, and I keep talking about this, you can't overstate their ratings. I mean, they're not just the number one cable news channel. They're the number one channel on all of cable television. I mean, it's mind-boggling. I mean, it's like you couldn't make as much money going down in your basement and running a printing press 24/7 that printed out dollars. This thing is so insanely successful. It's mind-boggling. And so you compare that to MSNBC, not even, you know, on an average primetime night, Fox News has 4 times viewers than MSNBC does, you know, and also during the day too. So, I mean, there's no real comparison. And maybe, and bring that up as an example, liberals, for whatever reason, aren't interested in listening to stuff like this. They aren't. It's just they aren't. And liberal talk radio is the reason there isn't any is nobody's interested in listening to it. Now that's true now. I have an example, and this completely got lost to history, but it's worth bringing up. So I think this is around 2010, about maybe 13, 15 years ago. There was Air America, and I don't know if you guys remember this. It's supposed to be a liberal talk radio network, and it started. And their marquee talent was Al Franken, who, of course, was a famous comedian from Saturday Night Live, and he did a 12 to 3 p.m. shift Eastern time. He competed directly with Rush Limbaugh. Now, what got lost in the history of this is that in the cities where he did directly competed with Rush Limbaugh, you know, so that's when Rush did a live 12 to noon to 3-2, but a lot of stations that ran him would tape delay it. So, but in the cities where Franken and Limbaugh ran head to head, Franken beat him in most of them, and, you know, which surprised the shit out of everybody. But then you're asking, why did they fail? I'll tell you why they failed. They couldn't monetize this goddamn thing, and that's because they're fucking idiots. I mean, it's a problem liberals have. They can't run businesses. You know, you basically beat the Johnny Carson of talk radio, and you still couldn't make any money at it. I just find this mind-boggling. But that kind of got lost in the whole thing. When Franken ran head-to-head with Limbaugh, in most of the cities, Franken beat him. It's like, You know, so there must have been and maybe it's Franklin, because Franklin's so unique. I mean, Franklin, he is a comedian, and the show was pretty funny too, from what I remember. I didn't listen to it a lot, but you know, that was when I was a liberal too. So, but anyway, that kind of got lost. It's kind of interesting. Yeah. And what was I going to say then? Okay, Jim, try again. Try again. Like, yeah. I can't remember. I think I'm done. Well, I've been chattering on here for about 55 minutes. So yeah, I think we're done for tonight. Does that sound good with you? Yeah. Yeah, thanks for not calling. I mean, you know, Harrison brought this up. I'm being facetious. I would have loved for you to call. He brought this up. He said, you know, and the thing is, I mean, I'm very kind. 2 weeks before we started, around June 15th, I'm sorry, July 15th, we started on July 31st. Talkers Magazine ran a story about this very show. As a matter of fact, it's the very first, a link to that's the very first post in our blog at jimandnight.com. Because they concluded that this is the first talk show in America that took video phone calls. And apparently we still are. But we have not been getting a lot of calls. I mean, we have been getting calls, but not a lot. And he said, you shouldn't feel bad. Harrison said this on Tuesday. He said, you shouldn't feel bad because, you know, some of the biggest stations in America are having trouble getting people to call in. And he said it's because he thinks that the novelty of calling a radio station is now completely lost, especially with the internet and being able to post and stuff. Nobody cares. I think he's right. I kind of thought the novelty of the uniqueness of this would people call. But then again, on the other hand, there's another thing, and I've discovered this over the last 3 months, and that is a lot of you don't want to call because a lot of you don't want your picture on the screen because a lot of you are trolling assholes. You don't want to call up because you don't want your picture on Jim Peters tonight. So, and the real amazing thing is the way our setup is, technically, you don't have to show your video to actually call in. If you got your mic running, that's enough. So, but still, whatever. All right, I want to thank you folks for listening and watching. I appreciate it. I got the light in here is much, we've done some experiments again, and the light in here is much better, although about 5 minutes before we went on, one of my fill lights fizzed out. So we got to take care of that. We got way more lights running than we were before. And the picture's a lot better. At least I think so. I don't know if you noticed. So next week, Wednesday, 50th anniversary of JFK shooting. So we'll talk about that. Otherwise, we might have a guest on Tuesday. I might cancel Monday's show. Thursday, of course, is Thanksgiving. We're not going to do a show on Thursday. So I can't even tell you. I mean, this is kind of weird. I've never been in this spot before, but we may cancel Monday, we may not, and I will let you know at the last minute. We now on Rumble, we do run a placeholder if we do cancel. If you go to Rumble, you can tell. Yeah, it actually says there, no show, and we run the little countdown, even though that's all that's there. So when we post it on our blog, too. So, and our website's at jimandnight.com. Got a nice blog running there. We had all our archived episodes there. You can watch all of them. In reverse order, the newest ones first. There is our watch page where you can all the links to all the channels we're on and all social media. You got all of them there. We run audio only on SpreakerLive.com. No, not SpreakerLive.com, but on Spreaker Live, which you have to have the Spreaker podcast app to get. But all those audio only shows also are immediately posted on demand podcasts too. So we got that going too. So at any rate, thank you so much. I really appreciate this. I appreciate you watching. Good night, Esperanza. Good night, Uncle Donnie. And good night to you, wherever you are. We'll see you next week.